From Politico, this is Women Rule, where we bring you real talk with women bosses. I'm Anna Palmer, senior Washington correspondent and co-author of the Politico Playbook.
I mean, I think if I were to sit here and tell you today that back then I knew exactly what I was doing, that would be a lie. But that's what a lot of women do.
That's Tina Smith, the newly minted Democratic senator from Minnesota.
A lot of women find that what they have to do is improvise. They don't necessarily know how all the pieces are going to come together. They're not exactly sure what direction they're going to go.
Tina Smith knows a thing or two about improvising. She was Minnesota's lieutenant governor just last year. And then a national scandal rocked her home state.
Senator Al Franken, a Democrat from Minnesota, describing today as the worst day of his political life, announcing he will retire from the U.S. Senate after a lot of pressure, after eight women came forward with various accounts of sexual harassment against the senator.
In the day's other news, Minnesota will soon have its own new U.S. senator. The state's Democratic Lieutenant Governor, Tina Smith, has been tapped to fill Senator Al Franken's seat.
Smith was sworn into office in January. But she might not be there for long. There's a special election in November, but Smith says she isn't going to settle for just a few months in office.
The key thing that I have to do is to be the very best senator that I can be.
We talked with Smith about all that and more, including the Me Too movement that ushered her into office.
I think it is an issue about how men and women, you know, ought to work together.
Her feelings about Donald Trump.
It is up to the voters of this country to decide whether he is fit for office.
And her brief stint working on the Trans-Alaskan pipeline when she was just 18.
I worked 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, 6 weeks on, 2 weeks, and then you go back and take 2 weeks off. Sometimes I wonder what my parents were thinking, letting me do that.
Stay tuned for our interview with Senator Tina Smith. On the podcast, we'll be bringing you real talk with women bosses, asking how did you make it and what advice would you give a woman looking to lead. If you're a fan of the show, please subscribe to Women Rule on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us and leave a review. And please share our episodes on social media and follow me on Twitter at @APalmerDC. You can also join the Women Rule community by texting WOMEN to 66866. Women Rule is produced by Politico in partnership with our founding partners, Google and the Tory Burch Foundation. I want to give you a heads up that I'll be in Austin for South by Southwest in a couple of weeks. I'm going to do a live episode of Women Rule on March 12th. And we're going to be interviewing not just one, but two really interesting women. We're chatting with Wendy Davis, who's a former Texas state senator who you probably remember from her long filibuster on the floor where she wore sneakers and became famous. She's also the founder of Deeds, Not Words, a group of passionate people helping young women take action on women's equality issues. And I'm also putting on my food fangirl hat, talking with Christina Tosi, the founder and CEO of the award-winning bakery Milk Bar. If you want to come see us live, visit southbysouthwest.com, where you can purchase a badge to see not only us, but all the inspiring conference sessions, music, films, and other awesome stuff they're doing down there. And now, our interview with Senator Tina Smith. Senator, thank you so much for joining us. You are pretty new to the Senate gig. We're sitting in your office here. You were sworn in at the beginning of January. How's it going so far?
Well, I've been in this job for about 2 months, I think, and it's so interesting. It's a combination of, wow, I'm in the United States Senate. I approached the Senate chamber the first day that I was sworn in, and literally, you know, my heart is beeping, you know, beating out of my chest, and it's just incredible. And then at the same time, it's sort of like starting any new job. You've got to figure out, like, how do I get around and where are the bathrooms and get to know your colleagues and make sure you have your ID out all the time. And overall, it's not anything I ever anticipated, but I am really so excited to be here.
So how has the transition been? I'm a Midwesterner. You're a Midwesterner. They always talk about Minnesota nice. Have you encountered that here on the Hill, or has there been kind of hiccups along the way at all?
Well, normally when you join the Senate, you have campaigned for a year and a half, and then you have an orientation, and then you're sworn in, and then you're ready to go. And I kind of did everything backwards. I was appointed, and then I was sworn in, and then I, here I am. I have to say that even it was just me and Doug Jones who came in. We were sworn in on the same day, so we are the small but mighty class of 2018. I found my colleagues to be like what I would have expected, very, very collegial, very friendly.
What is, you know, you came on here, you hadn't campaigned, you probably hadn't thought necessarily, like, if I get to the Senate, this is the one thing I'm going to do. What is, you know, what do you want to spend your time doing on the committee side, or is there a bill that you're championing that you want to make sure you gets across the finish line?
Well, I am very pleased with the committees that I serve on, which are really allow me to work on the bread and butter issues that are so important to Minnesota, whether it's the Agriculture Committee, Energy and Natural Resources, Indian Affairs, which is very important to Minnesota, or the Health and Education Committee. All of those committees are dealing with core issues that are important to the economic lives of Minnesotans, and that's what I am very focused on. And a great example of that is I'm delighted to have been named to this sort of super committee to work on pensions. That is a great example of an issue that is so important to about 22,000 Minnesotans who have paid into their pensions, have every, you know, did everything right on their end, and now they're being told at their, you know, as they're in retirement, that maybe it's just not going to be there for them. And I feel that's a great thing to be working on.
We've spoken to a fair number of senators for the Women Rule podcast. They've all talked about how women in the upper chamber often band together, they support one another, they get things done, where maybe just some of their male colleagues, you know, can't. Have you had any examples of this already, of this kind of women's network?
There is a real sense of camaraderie among the women senators. I'm number 22, and so you know each other right away, and both the Republicans and the Democrats of the women senators have been great, and there's you just sort of like connect with one another. So, for example, though I'm a Minnesotan and I've lived in Minnesota since I was since 1984, I used to live in Alaska. So right away, Lisa Murkowski and I had a common bond because I'd worked on the Alaska pipeline and she'd worked on the Alaska pipeline. And though we'd have, disagreements on lots of issues, we can form a friendship because of that common experience.
So let's backtrack. Let's talk about kind of how you got into Minnesota. You got to Minnesota politics. You were originally not from Minnesota, right?
I'm originally from New Mexico. I was born in northern New Mexico, and my family lived in, when I was in high school and junior high school, we moved around quite a bit. I lived in Alaska and northern California. I went to business school, not a typical path for a United States senator. And I moved to Minnesota with my brand new husband, Archie. We had gotten married that summer. And my first job was I worked at General Mills. That was
a classic Minnesota company.
A classic Minnesota company, also a company that's known as being a great place for women. And Archie and I started out, we literally had nothing but a beat up orange car and which had no defroster. Major problem in Minnesota that winter. The windows are open. We're scraping the ice off of the inside of the windshield, saying, it's going to be okay. I know it's all going to be fine, but this really is a challenge. But $60,000 of school loans that we were going to have to figure out how to pay back. And that was a lot of money in 1984. So that was sort of the start of Minnesota, our lives in Minnesota.
I mean, talk about that. You were a woman, kind of at a big company. Then you go, you start your own marketing and political consulting firm. Were there challenges you encountered just by definition of the fact that maybe there weren't as many women in the workplace at that time or in, having business degrees?
When I left to General Mills to start my own company, first it was just me. And then gradually we grew to be a little bit bigger. But I mean, I think if I were to sit here and tell you today that back then I knew exactly what I was doing, that would be a lie. But that's what a lot of women do. A lot of women find that what they have to do is improvise. They don't necessarily know how all the pieces are going to come together. They're not exactly sure what direction they're going to go, but they appreciate that they have to make it up as they go along. It's a very creative process, I think. I know that that's the way it was for me. At the same time, our sons Mason and Sam were born, and I was juggling a lot. Well, that's the life of many women, is juggling a lot, whether they're juggling their children or their parents or their spouses, their jobs.
Were you always interested in politics, or did that come later?
I was always interested in politics. I majored in political science in college. My mom and dad were very politically active. My father served on the school board, and my mother, like a lot of women in her generation, was active in the League of Women Voters. And so the idea that I should be a contributor to my community and that one way of doing that was by getting involved in politics was sort of baked into me. When Arch and I bought our first house in a community in Minnesota called St. Louis Park.
My aunt lives there.
Yes. Great community. I just showed up to volunteer on local state elections. And the first campaign I worked on was a state legislative race. I literally put the kids in the car seats of the car, and my job was to drive around this legislative district and figure out where the apartments were and how many people lived in those apartments so that we could have a conversation with them about the campaign. And we won that Senate race. It was we shifted it from Republican to Democrat, and we won it by like half a point. And I thought, this is great.
The adrenaline rush,
yes.
Had to be there, right? To take some courage, though. I mean, you're going up to apartment buildings. I mean, did you just kind of know you had the confidence to do it, or how did you summon that, as a younger woman doing this kind of work?
That's a really great question, and I will be... I'm turning 60 on Sunday, and so I'm thinking a lot about how time passes, and I was actually a pretty shy person. I don't know if you've ever read some of the books by Ann Cuddy, who has become very well known because of the work that she's done about sort of how you power posing. She's got a great TED talk and Ann talks about how sometimes you just need to fake it until you become it. And I think what she means by that is you just need to kind of go out there and try it and do it and experiment, and that gives you the experience, which gives you the confidence. And I think that was more me than being just like, I know exactly what to do.
Well, talk about that. I mean, it sounds like you have some interesting stories from your time in Alaska. Before you went to college, you were working on the Trans-Alaskan Pipeline. What was that like?
I worked on the pipeline when I was 18 years old. I had my parents at this point had moved to the Bay Area, and I had decided that I wanted to work on the pipeline because I knew it was going to be a great way to earn money to help pay for college. I flew up to Fairbanks, Alaska, and joined the union, and then waited. I got my assignment, and so then you fly all the way up to Prudhoe Bay, and there I was. And the way we did it, the way it worked in those days was I had a six-week shift. I worked 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, 6 weeks on, 2 weeks, and then you go back and take 2 weeks off. Sometimes I wonder what my parents were thinking, letting me do that. But everybody was great to me. I worked really, really hard, kind of lugging milk, and I did everything in the kitchen that didn't require me to touch anything hot or sharp. No hot, low skill work. And at the end of my time, I came down into the kitchens to say goodbye to my people, my buddies I've been working with. And I'd been, dressed in like the big white cooking shirt and the check pants and the little white hat on my head the whole time. I had very short hair. And I walked down into the cafeteria, and one of the guys that I'd been working with looks at me and he goes, "Holy cripes, you're a girl."
So good.
There you have it.
Maybe you missed some interesting conversations otherwise, working with in such close quarters.
Right, probably all for the good,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
What made you eventually decide to step out kind of from behind the scenes, from working on campaigns to being a public figure, to going into public service in the official capacity?
I had been working at, had been working in the private sector. I worked for Planned Parenthood. I'd had some experience working in the not-for-profit sector, and then I'd transitioned to being chief of staff for the mayor of Minneapolis, and then the chief of staff for Governor Dayton. And then the question arose about running for lieutenant governor. And I think I did all of that with just a real passion for going someplace where I could be helpful and make a difference and help make things better. Like a lot of women, though, when I was asked to consider running for lieutenant governor, I said, well, that's ridiculous, and just said, walked away. This is very common of women in politics. I'm sure you've heard these stories many times. It takes a little bit. We often have to be asked more than once. We have to be persuaded that we can do it, and that was certainly the case for me. And even the decision to accept this appointment and be in the Senate and also run for the Senate on such a short timetable was also the case. But for me, it was what mattered at the end was that I realized I knew what to do. I was the right person to do it, and that it was a that I was needed. I needed to do it, and so I approach it with kind of knowing that, with a lot of even though it was a very difficult moment, of course, with a lot of joy in the opportunity to serve.
You'd also managed some unsuccessful campaigns.
Yes,
like Walter Mondale's campaign for Senate in 2002. Did you take any lessons from those campaign failures into kind of that transition or lessons learned?
I have, like anybody who's been in politics for a long time, I've been involved in a lot of campaigns that didn't work out. And what I have learned, I think, about that is a couple things. The first is that in campaigns, there are so many things that are out of your control, and the key important thing is to focus on what you can control and where you really can make a difference. And the second thing I've learned is that successful campaigns are like any kind of successful relationship. You have to be able to have a conversation with people and really listen to them and understand where they're coming from. And if you can do that, then you are gonna be able to build the coalition and even sometimes a movement for change. But it doesn't happen until you have that connection and you really understand where people are coming from.
Who would you say has had the most impact on your career?
Two people. My mom, who was a crazy, fiery, populist Midwestern who told me I could do whatever I wanted to do. And then Vice President Mondale, who has been my friend and mentor for several decades now and never hesitates to call me up and give me good advice.
Talking about a movement right now, we are clearly going through kind of the whole current Me Too moment, and that sort of soul searching within the Democratic Party has done a lot in terms of trying to figure out, where they are on this issue. You took office after Senator Al Franken resigned in the wake of the allegations. You said before that you want to do everything you can to move Minnesota forward. How should Minnesota move forward, and how do you think the Democratic Party should move forward?
Yeah. Well, let me say first on the raised this the question of the Me Too movement, mm-hmm. and that kind of what's happening. And I really believe that our country is at a tipping point here, and that that there is an opportunity to really change the way women are. Change the way women are treated in the workplace, in their workplaces. And we see this in the United States Senate and the Capitol, and we see it in state legislatures, and we see it in Hollywood, but we also need to see it in the hotel rooms where women are, working by themselves sometimes. We need to see it in fast food restaurants. It's essentially, fundamentally, I think, about women being respected for the work that they do. And I think it's very interesting. Like a lot of times, I believe that young women are leading the way, and women who are in my generation can learn a lot from younger women who are saying, "Well, this is what you have been dealing with throughout your career, but maybe you shouldn't have to."
How do you think the Democratic Party has handled it? I mean, they've clearly had their own issues, within it. Sometimes at the state level, sometimes at the federal level. Is it something where you kind of have to have a litmus test, you think?
I think that it is. I actually don't think it is a partisan issue. I think it is an issue about how men and women, you know, ought to work together. In Minnesota, a lot of work is being done to I think a lot of work is being done on training and helping people to understand, well, boy, when you do that, this is how it might be received by another person, and you should be aware of that, and you need to pay attention to that. I think that kind of training is really, really important. And it's ultimately, I believe, it's a cultural change that we're going through as a country, and it's not really a partisan issue. But I think that my party, the Democratic Party, needs to continue to lead the way in creating economic opportunity, paving the path for more economic opportunity for women. And to me, this is really part of that challenge, whether it is paid family leave, whether it is improved child care. As a woman who doesn't, or a man who doesn't have a safe, high-quality place for their child to go during the day or at night when they have to work, can't work. It certainly has to do with health care. To me, these are all economic issues that affect the opportunities that women have, and that's where I think we need to continue to lead.
So you've been pretty vocal already in some of your criticisms on President Trump, on everything from his tax plan to the investigation into Russian meddling. Do you think he's fit for office?
I think that it is up to the voters of this country to decide whether he is fit for office. What I will say is that I strongly disagree with him on almost everything. But I also believe that my state didn't send me to Washington, D.C., or any of us to Washington, D.C., to just throw bombs and fight. I think they sent us here to try to find common ground and get some things done. And so the challenge that we all have is figuring out how to be how to strongly stand up for what we believe in, which is our jobs, but then also look for the places where we can, you know, find some agreement. And maybe in some of, for example, in this budget, in the budget framework, which we passed with bipartisan support a couple of weeks ago, we'll be able to, that'll be an example of how we can do that, even with people with whom we disagree strongly on many things.
I mean, you talk about your state and kind of who they sent you. They sent Senator Franken. In 2016, Trump almost won the state.
Yes.
Clinton just barely edged him out. It was Clinton 46.4 to Trump 44.9. Someone who went to college in Minnesota, and that's fairly stunning to me. What do you think was happening there? Can you kind of explain that, kind of the phenomenon for in your state in Minnesota that you know so well?
Well, I think I subscribe to the belief that for every complicated question, there's a simple answer that's almost always wrong. And I think that that holds true for what happened in Minnesota in 2016. The reality, though, is that in many parts of Minnesota outside of the big metro areas and the college towns and the regional centers like Duluth or Rochester, the state has a lot of people who work incredibly hard. Their lives are confronted with major changes in the world around them, whether it's, you know, trade or globalization, changes in the way their jobs are working, changes in the way they're getting paid, and it's dramatically different than it was 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. And I think that what happened is that Trump was able to connect with that sense of real concern. And I'm not like saying, oh, isn't, you know, it's wrong that they're concerned. Of course they're concerned. They don't just feel like this economy is leaving them by. It is leaving them by. But of course the question is, what do you do about it? And I think that as I've seen since he came so close to winning in Minnesota in 2016, that many of the things that he has done have been completely the opposite of helping folks in communities like Wilmer or Fergus Falls or Thief River Falls. In fact, he's taken steps that don't help those communities. They hurt them. And I think the question now is, what do we do to help for Democrats? I think it's offer a better idea.
So let's talk about the future, better ideas. You've already said you're planning on running in the November 2018 special election to finish out Franken's term, which is set to expire in 2020. You mentioned a little bit the challenges there, right? Compressed timeline, I'm sure fundraising, all kinds of things. What are the biggest challenges you see in making that decision?
Well, the biggest question was, for me, was it could it be done? Was it possible to do? And I became convinced that it was. And I think that because I was lieutenant governor for 3 years and had done so much in Minnesota for the last 30, I'd really know Minnesota like the back of my hand. Being lieutenant governor is sort of like being invited into everyone's living room, and you just get an understanding of the state, and that gives me a gives me comfort that I can carry forward. But that's not to say it's not going to be a challenge. On the other hand, some of these campaigns just go on and on and on and on. Maybe it'll be a little bit of a blessing that this campaign, which we have 35 weeks left on, will not be as long, and it'll give us some permission to be a little bit more innovative and try some new things. And sure, we have to, you know, do a lot in a short period of time. But I'm optimistic by nature, but I feel very optimistic about this because I really do believe that what the Republican Party and what President is talking about is not what Minnesotans need. And, you know, they're very focused on bread and butter issues. You know, what's happening in the ag community? How can I help make higher education more affordable? How can I have better childcare? And that's what I'll be talking about.
Yeah, I mean, you are facing some potential tough fights against some Democrats who are gunning for your seat in the primary. How do you distinguish yourself compared to the other Democrats?
I think that the key thing that I have to do is to be the very best senator that I can be and to demonstrate by the way that I do this job what kind of senator I will be, and then to just to go out and have conversations with people about their lives. And I mean, campaigns are complicated, and there's lots of data and lots of information and all the digital stuff is, but I think at the end of the day, it's about how you have those conversations. And that's what I'll do.
Do you think Democrats can take back the Senate in 2018?
I sure hope so. I have to tell you, I think that, there are, putting my seat aside, which is sort of like a keep, but also almost like an open seat in some ways. There are, I think, big opportunities to win a couple more seats. And we, of course, it's an unusual year. We think we have 26 Democratic seats up. And
it's a tough map.
It is not. It's a tough map, but also it's an extraordinary time. So,
and what woman would you like to see run for president in 2020?
Oh, I will take the fifth on that. I think there are there are a lot of really incredible women. Of course, my senior senator Amy Klobuchar is, very, very talented. And it's not for me to say. I think that there's a lot of water that's going to pass under the bridge before we get to that point.